Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to our webinar. The topic is bilateral arbitration treaties. Are they a better fit than bilateral investment treaties for dispute resolution? As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this call is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Vyapar Desai. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Ali, for setting this up. And thank you, audience, for staying on. We are extremely sorry for a delay of almost 30 minutes. But there was some technical snag, as we always sometimes see in most of the technology issues, but now we have been able to overcome them. So continuing with our webinar series that we started somewhere in September. In fact, our first webinar we did it on September 6th with Mr. Salim Mulan, QC, and followed by Toby Landau and Michael Wong. I think this is the fourth interview in the series on various topics concerning bilateral investment treaties and international commercial arbitrations. And today we are very, very privileged and honored to have Mr. Gary Bond for our topic. And with that introduction, I'll hand it over to Shama, who is the senior member of our district team in Mumbai at Mishra Tripathi Associates, to introduce both the topic and Gary himself, and then we'll have some questions for Gary between myself, Shama, and Bhavna, who is also part of our dispute team at Mishra Tripathi Associates.
Hello, everybody. We have callers from various jurisdictions today. Thank you so much for joining us. The topic for our webinar today is novel and, I must say, intriguing. We will be discussing the concept of bilateral arbitration treaties, a concept visualized and proposed by our very guest expert today, Mr. Gary Bond. Mr. Gary Bond is the chair of international arbitration practice at WilmerHale LLP. He is an eminent author, an arbitrator, and has participated as a counsel in more than 650 international arbitrations. For the past 20 years, he has been ranked as one of the world's leading international arbitration practitioners. Thank you very much, Mr. Bond, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mr. Bond, you have conceptualized and invited states to adopt the default mechanism for resolving international commercial disputes through arbitration, through the bilateral arbitration treaties, popularly called as the BATs. What is the idea behind a bilateral arbitration treaty?
Thanks for that question, and also thanks for the opportunity to talk about the subject. The idea of bilateral arbitration treaties, or as you rightly abbreviated, BATs, comes from a relative, a cousin or nephew perhaps, which is bilateral investment treaties. The history of bilateral investment treaties, I think, is well known. They were adopted in the second half of the last century by states in order to encourage trade and, in particular, investment. The basic concept behind a bilateral investment treaty was that it provided substantive protections to foreign investors, respectively, from the two contracting states, and then, in addition, and very importantly, provided procedural mechanisms to give effect to implement those substantive protections. The procedural mechanisms that provided those protections were a so-called standing offer to arbitrate by each of the two host states. The two host states would promise to arbitrate disputes under the bilateral investment treaty with investors from the other state that was party to the bid. And this standing offer to arbitrate could be accepted by a qualifying foreign investor. The essential purpose of these arbitration mechanisms was to provide a expeditious and even-handed mechanism for resolving investment disputes under the bilateral investment treaty itself, under its substantive protections. The concept of a bilateral arbitration treaty builds on that, learns from that essential concept in bilateral investment treaties. The notion under a bilateral arbitration treaty is that you use the concept of arbitration as a default means of dispute resolution in the commercial context, just as investment arbitration has learned from commercial arbitration. I thought that commercial arbitration could learn from investment arbitration. And so the essential concept of a bilateral arbitration treaty is that if two nationals of the respective treaty states, states A and B, let us say, have a commercial dispute, an international commercial dispute arising out of some sort of cross-border commercial transaction, then the default means of dispute resolution, unless the parties otherwise agreed, would be by international arbitration pursuant to a mechanism laid out in the BAT, laid out in the bilateral arbitration treaty. That would mean that the host state's courts, the two courts of states A and B, would refer parties to that arbitration mechanism instead of resolving the commercial dispute, the international commercial dispute themselves. And likewise, at the end of the arbitral process, those two states, the courts in states A and B, would recognize and enforce arbitral awards made pursuant to that mechanism. International arbitration would become the default means of international commercial dispute resolution between nationals of those two states. That's the essential idea of the bilateral arbitration treaty.
Sure. And as you rightly said, this is definitely an unusual or a novel concept, although something which is learned from the investment treaty itself. But is this concept analogous or similar to something which we already have in dispute resolution or otherwise, or this is completely a novel idea, or can we draw some kind of a parallel?
It's interesting because one parallel, as you rightly mentioned, is bilateral investment treaties where arbitration provides a kind of default mechanism. Parties don't have to, as they traditionally did in investment contracts and international commercial contracts, negotiate an individualized arbitration clause. There is no arbitration agreement in the traditional sense when a foreign investor arbitrates claims under a bilateral investment treaty with a host state. Instead, you have effectively a legislative solution. The treaty mechanism provides a default means of resolving those disputes. Some bilateral investment treaties and the ICSID Convention itself, of course, allow parties to agree on other means of resolving their disputes, whether through some sort of tailor-made, individualized arbitration provision or a form selection provision, choosing national courts. Interestingly, there have been other mechanisms in the international commercial context that use a mechanism for dispute resolution like a bilateral arbitration treaty. The Moscow Convention between the Warsaw Pact states in the 1970s and 1980s, although not widely used, provided that the default means of dispute resolution between state trading organizations would be international commercial arbitration. The arbitral institution wasn't specified in the Moscow Convention, but there was a provision that provided that the default arbitral institution would be that at the respondent's home jurisdiction. And so when you think about it, that concept is similar in some respects to a bilateral arbitration treaty in that it provided arbitration as a default means of dispute resolution. You didn't need an individualized negotiated arbitration agreement. If you didn't have that or any other agreement on dispute resolution, you would default to the Moscow Convention's rules for choosing an arbitral institution, but you would be required to arbitrate your dispute. The bilateral arbitration treaty concept is like that, but somewhat different in that it specifies a single uniform arbitration mechanism in the treaty itself. That's the concept.
Sure.
What exactly is a bilateral arbitration treaty, and what are the provisions of such a treaty contain?
You can find, if you look on the website, the WilmerHale website, you can find, or if you Google bilateral arbitration treaty, model treaty, you can find the text of bilateral arbitration, a model bilateral arbitration treaty together with commentary that explains its provisions. The treaty itself, if you think about a standalone bilateral arbitration treaty, is not terribly long or terribly complicated. In some respects, it looks a little bit like the New York Convention. It has, or like a bilateral investment treaty. It has essentially provisions that obligate the two states in question, states A and B, to refer parties to arbitration in the event of an international commercial dispute between the nationals of the respective states, and then also obligates those courts to recognize and enforce arbitral awards made pursuant to the bilateral arbitration treaties process. The bilateral arbitration treaty also has definitions of nationals, which is an important topic, just as it is with bilateral investment treaties. One should also remember that although the model bilateral arbitration treaty exists, states would, of course, be free to tailor the terms of such a treaty to their own particular circumstances. The bilateral arbitration treaty, the model bilateral arbitration treaty that I have drafted, provides a default means of international commercial arbitration. The means that I selected was uncitral arbitration, with the states being free to choose the arbitral seat. You could imagine states A and B providing that their respective nationals, if a commercial dispute arose between nationals of states A and B, that the arbitral seat would be state C, a neutral state as compared to the two countries in question. If the two countries, for example, were English-speaking, then the bilateral arbitration treaty could also provide for a default means of selecting the language. English could be the default language, absent contrary agreement between the parties. The terms of the bilateral arbitration treaty, although simple in concept, namely arbitration as a default means of dispute resolution, with courts being required, absent contrary agreement by the parties, to refer parties to that default mechanism and being required to recognize arbitral awards resulting from that process, subject to the same kinds of exceptions and limitations that exist in the New York Convention, states would be free to adopt alternatives to those model terms.
Sure.
On a slightly more theoretical level, critics could say that the concept of a bilateral arbitration treaty, that is, to have a default mechanism for arbitration, conflicts with one of the most fundamental values of arbitration, that is, party autonomy. How would you respond to that criticism?
Well, if it were correct, that would be serious criticism indeed. But as I've tried to describe, the bilateral arbitration treaty is a default mechanism. It's not a mandatory mechanism. And in particular, parties would always be free to contract out of that dispute resolution mechanism. Only where parties had not agreed to, for example, a different arbitral mechanism, or, for example, a forum selection agreement, would the bilateral arbitration treaty's default mechanism come into play. It would be entirely subject to the party's autonomy and would only come into force, would only apply where the parties had chosen, for whatever reason, not to exercise their autonomy. A little bit like the Vienna Convention on the International Sale of Goods, parties would also be free to opt out entirely of the bilateral arbitration treaty mechanism without specifying any alternative means of international dispute resolution. It's difficult to understand why parties might choose to do so. One could understand why they might want to select the particular country's courts instead of the bilateral arbitration treaty mechanism to resolve their disputes. But why they would wish to opt entirely out of the BAT provisions is difficult to understand. It would leave them right in the same situation that they would be without an arbitration clause or a forum selection agreement, subject to all the uncertainties and unpredictabilities that arise in those circumstances.
So, Mr. Bond, there are some matters where states prefer to exercise sovereignty. Would a bilateral arbitration treaty undermine state sovereignty?
It's a great question, but I don't believe that it would, for a couple reasons. First, as I mentioned, the bilateral arbitration treaty would be ultimately subject to the two contracting states' desires and objectives. They could exclude particular subject matters from the scope of the bilateral arbitration treaty. For example, they could exclude any consumer matters. Indeed, the basic concept of the bilateral arbitration treaty is that it is for commercial disputes between commercial entities. It's for resolving disputes between merchants. A state could make that definition more demanding, in a sense, more restrictive. It could, for example, limit it to disputes between corporate entities, not involving individuals. And it could, as I've already said, explicitly exclude disputes involving consumers, disputes involving employers and employees, and the like. In addition to that, states would be free, as they are with bilateral investment treaties, to exclude particular economic sectors. They could exclude, for example, telecommunications if they wish to do so. I personally don't see why they would wish to do so, but insofar as states wish to ensure regulatory authority with respect to particular industrial or commercial sectors, they would be free to do that. Finally, like the New York Convention, bilateral arbitration treaties would also have all the exceptions in them that the New York Convention does, exceptions for non-arbitrability, exceptions for awards that violated public policy. And in that way, just as the New York Convention protects state sovereignty by having escape valves in the form of the non-arbitrability doctrine and the public policy doctrine, so a bilateral arbitration treaty, too, would be careful to safeguard state sovereignty.
Bilateral arbitration treaty directs the parties to international arbitration. Do you see this as a denial of the fundamental right of parties to access to justice and state courts? Do you think this would be a potential risk?
It would be a serious concern if it were true, but I don't believe that it is true. I think it's important always to remember that we're speaking here of international commercial disputes, disputes that inevitably involve the courts and laws of not one country, but two or more countries. In those circumstances, one isn't talking about access to a national court. Access to a national court in a domestic context is fundamentally important. But in an international context, one isn't talking about access to just one court. One is instead talking about access to two countries' courts, the courts of both A and B. What that means when you think about it, and as we well know from practical experience, is that the party from State A will almost inevitably have recourse to the courts in State A. The party from State B equally inevitably will have recourse to the courts in State B. Jurisdictional disputes, forum selection disputes, choice of law disputes will ensue. Both parties will have the privilege of paying for two sets of lawyers. Almost inevitably, perhaps not inevitably, but almost inevitably, Party A will prevail in State A's courts, and Party B will prevail in State B's courts. The only positive aspect of that story for either of the two parties is that those judgments, the judgments of the courts in State A and in State B, one-sided as they may be, won't be enforceable because there is no international equivalent to the New York Convention for national court judgments. And at the end of the day, therefore, both parties having litigated in two places, in a sense, both parties having had a home court advantage, neither will be able to take advantage of that advantage. I ask myself, and I ask you to think, is that really access to justice? I would suggest that, in fact, the opposite is true. It's a denial of justice. Our current default mechanism for resolving international commercial disputes, that paradigm of parallel litigation in the courts of both states A and B, isn't access to justice. It's a very real denial of justice. And what the bilateral arbitration treaty does is actually provides access to real justice, access to true justice, because it provides an arbitral mechanism that is even-handed. It's, as we described, one that's negotiated equally between the two states and provides for arbitration in a neutral forum under the UNCITRAL rules, subject to the annulment authority of the courts of state C, a neutral court. I think that is more real access to justice than what we currently do, and therefore, although access to justice is a fundamentally important value, fundamentally important civil right, it's one that we don't protect that well in our current system, and which a bilateral arbitration treaty would protect much better.
Sure. So I think looks like we have gone a full circle, because we started this webinar series talking about going to World Investment Courts from the model of dispute resolution arbitration under BITs. And now we are talking about BACs even as part of the international commercial arbitration. I'm sure this is not an easy task. So what would be your arguments to persuade the policymakers and different state in terms of different stakeholders to adopt a BAC versus allow parties to go to a court system? Because now we are frankly moving one step further in terms of international commercial arbitrations. So what would be your pitch to make that successful when it comes to different positions and different stakes that people are trying to address?
I think the arguments for a bilateral arbitration treaty are very familiar. They're much the same arguments, indeed perhaps the same arguments that underlie adoption, ratification of the New York Convention, and adoption of the UNCITRAL model law. The New York Convention was adopted, the model law has been adopted or followed in countless jurisdictions around the world because it facilitates international trade and commerce. International trade gives rise to unique disputes and produces unique uncertainties because of its cross-border character, because of the challenges of enforcement and parallel proceedings. International arbitration, where parties have negotiated international arbitration agreement, provides for an efficient, even-handed, expert, and enforceable means of dispute resolution, and thus makes international trade and commerce less risky, more secure. That's why states ceded a portion of their sovereignty by ratifying the New York Convention, by adopting the UNCITRAL model law, and allowing international arbitral tribunals to resolve disputes that might otherwise be resolved in national courts. States ceded their sovereignty in a limited respect because it benefited them and their people by facilitating cross-border transactions, by facilitating international trade and commerce. Those are exactly the reasons that states would ratify a bilateral arbitration treaty, because it would make international commerce more secure and more predictable. Parties, even the most sophisticated commercial parties, very frequently fail, either because of haste or neglect or attention to other matters, to include effective dispute resolution provisions in their contracts. They either don't include any provision at all, or they include a provision that is pathological and unenforceable. We've all seen law books full of countless examples of pathological arbitration clauses or pathological form selection agreements. We've all, in our private practice, had to counsel clients who had agreed to clauses like that which don't work or who had failed to include dispute resolution mechanisms in their contract. A bilateral arbitration treaty would provide a safety net, a default mechanism for those circumstances where parties had failed to conclude either any or any effective dispute resolution mechanism. And by doing that, a bilateral arbitration treaty would facilitate international commerce in precisely the way, perhaps in a better way, than the New York Convention currently does.
Sure.
In this region, there is an increasing trend towards multilateralism and regional free trade agreements. Do you think we can have multilateral arbitration treaties?
You could. You could call them MAT instead of PAT, the Multilateral Arbitration Treaty. And there's no reason. For example, if you think about the Pacific Island states, Fiji, Samoa, and other states in the region, or in other areas where there's a common language, a common cultural heritage, a common legal set of legal traditions, you could well imagine a multilateral arbitration treaty. In a sense, that's what the Moscow Convention that I referred to previously was like. One could also combine a bilateral arbitration treaty with a free trade agreement, given what I said about the fundamental purposes of bilateral arbitration treaty to facilitate international trade and commerce. You could combine the bilateral arbitration treaty's provisions with a free trade agreement, all aimed at the same purpose, encouraging free trade. Another reason that states would choose to enter into both PATs and also MATs, multilateral arbitration treaties, is not just that it does good for international trade, but if you accept what I've said about access to justice, it does good for all people. It does good for the rule of law. If one accepts that our current default means of resolving international commercial disputes is defective, if one accepts that it doesn't really provide a fair and effective way of producing enforceable decisions resolving commercial disputes, then BATs and MATs would give citizens of all states better access to justice. That's another reason states both could and should adopt those types of treaty provisions.
Investment arbitration under the present ISDS system can sometimes prove to be very expensive for investors and for developing countries. Private parties that have disputes with international contracts may be compelled to go for arbitration under a bilateral arbitration treaty. How does that supposed to be a cost-effective model for such parties?
Well, there is an ongoing dispute about whether arbitration, in fact, is more efficient and more expeditious than the available alternatives. I think the answer to that question depends to some extent on what one thinks the available alternatives are. In some countries, I can't speak for India, but court proceedings take a very long time and can, for a variety of reasons, be extremely expensive. If one is thinking about a paradigm like that which I have described, parties litigate in parallel in both states A and B, one can well imagine then that both time and costs of dispute resolution will be exceptionally high. One has to pay two sets or four sets of lawyers to resolve the same dispute. And then finally, the dispute doesn't actually get resolved in an enforceable manner. And so, in some sense, all that time and cost, all that time and money is wasted. Bilateral arbitration treaties, like international commercial arbitration, centralize the dispute resolution process. And one may wish that process could be more expeditious. And to that end, arbitral institutions like the Singapore International Arbitration Center and other institutions around the region have designed expedited procedure rules by which arbitrations involving relatively small values, less than, say, $5 million, can be resolved in a fast-track process, a process that takes less than 6 months. And hence, because lawyers inevitably are a little bit like taxi drivers, they charge you by the hour or the amount of work that they've done, an expedited procedure arbitration inevitably costs the client a good deal less. The arbitrators cost less, in part because you have a sole arbitrator instead of a three-person tribunal. And the result is reached much more quickly. In that sense, I think both one has to take into account the expense in national court proceedings and also the mechanisms that have been adopted and that are continuing to be adopted to make the arbitral process more efficient and expeditious.
How would an investor state award rendered under bilateral arbitration treaty be enforced? Would the New York Convention have any relationship with these investor state awards?
Yeah. Most of the decisions under most of the awards made under the terms of a bilateral arbitration treaty wouldn't be investor state. They would be international commercial arbitration awards. They would be awards made between a manufacturer in state A that was selling to a purchaser in state B. A dispute might arise about the quality of the goods or payment. That dispute, absent contrary agreement by the parties agreeing on some other arbitral mechanism or a form selection provision, would be submitted to arbitration pursuant to the terms of the bilateral arbitration treaty. If it followed the model bilateral arbitration treaty that I've outlined, it would be resolved by UNCITRAL arbitration. And the award would then be subject to recognition in the same manner as the New York Convention award. An issue would arise, a fair issue would arise as to whether the award would be subject to recognition outside of states A and B who would commit in the bilateral arbitration treaty to recognize that award in the same way that they recognize New York Convention awards, subject to the same types of exceptions. Would the award be subject to recognitions in states C, D, and E? Arguably, it would be under the New York Convention. On the other hand, states might make the view that the award wasn't truly the product of an arbitration agreement, and thus that under Article 5.1a or otherwise, the award could be denied recognition. Of course, though, just because the New York Convention didn't require recognition wouldn't prevent other states from, in fact, recognizing the award, and I suspect that many states would, in fact, choose in those circumstances where states A and B had bound themselves to a bilateral arbitration treaty, most other states would recognize awards made pursuant to that treaty process.
So could you tell us if bilateral arbitration treaties could effectively cover investment treaty disputes?
I think they could, and they might do so in a couple ways. One, it would depend, of course, on the terms of individual bilateral arbitration treaties, but those terms could well allow claims both by and against state entities and states themselves. They could, in a sense, combine the provisions of both a bilateral investment treaty and a bilateral arbitration treaty. One could imagine that in particular if the bilateral arbitration treaty was, or its provisions were part of a broader free trade agreement. One could also imagine circumstances where parties would negotiate a bilateral arbitration treaty that combined the terms and protections of a bilateral investment treaty with the default mechanism of a bilateral arbitration treaty.
Sure. So just taking this a little further down and making it more specific. So do you think that we are now replacing the dispute resolution clauses under BITs and relying on that in a way? Do you see some overlap, or is the interplay between bits and bats will work them itself out, or how do you see this playing out as we go along if states start recognizing bats?
I think the first step would not be to have much overlap, frankly. I think bilateral arbitration treaties would focus primarily on international commercial disputes between businesses, and bilateral investment treaties, as they've historically done, would focus on investment disputes between, on the one hand, a foreign investor and, on the other hand, a host state. I think there might be reasons to have separate types of dispute resolution mechanisms for each of those two categories of disputes. The push for transparency, the push for amicus curiae submissions, the push for consistency in decision-making has been stronger, much stronger in the context of investment arbitration than most types of international commercial arbitration. And thus, I could well imagine that states would prefer to have a BAT mechanism for international commercial disputes between commercial parties on the one hand, and a BIT mechanism feeding perhaps into the ICSID convention for investment disputes.
So I think possibly we'll see both bits and bits as we go along, and it may be a good idea to negotiate both together, possibly because, as we discussed, they both serve a common purpose. That one is we're trying to address the issues related to investor vis-a-vis the state itself, and on the other hand, we are now addressing the problems which both investor parties from either states, irrespective of they have a claim against the state itself, can resolve themselves. So possibly not many of those claims may not even go on the fix. So maybe we are trying to actually address a little bit of this as well by introducing that. So with that, maybe since we have a little time left on the webinar, we may want to open the floor for questions for people who may have joined on this. If not, then we may have one or two last questions for you. Ali, if you can open up the floor for some questions, and then we'll see if at all we can ask one more question when Gary is already here with us.
Sure, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, press star and one on the touchtone phone. Participants, to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, press star and one. There are no questions in queue.
Sure, not a problem. So this time the questions may come up from the floor. Maybe one last question to Gary from our side. In a sense, I think we covered a little bit on this earlier. But if there is, let's say, a bit as well and a back, both are there and both are present, do you think one can choose one over the other when there is a dispute for an investor versus a state, or a state, or let's say, can state choose it for the purposes of their issues with the other state, or do you think that there will be enough language provided that there is no overlap?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and it's one that would need to be thought through in the context of specific bits and bats. One already has a variant, a version of that issue under existing bilateral investment treaties where a foreign investor may be able to bring claims under two or more different bilateral investment treaties depending upon the nationality of companies in the chain of ownership on the foreign investor's side. And one then has to ask, well, does that mean the foreign investor can choose any of the various bilateral investment treaties which might potentially be available in that chain of corporate ownership? Or is there some priority, some preference, or some limitation to only bringing one such claim? The Czech Republic, of course, in the Lauder decisions faced precisely that problem, where under different bilateral investment treaties, effectively the same investor using different corporate vehicles brought different claims under different bilateral investment treaties. And one needs to think through carefully how that works, both in the context of bilateral investment treaties, but also as the idea of a bilateral arbitration treaty raises the question in the context of the interplay between a bit and a bat. Arbitral tribunals have grappled with that problem. Some tribunals have used notions of abusive right or abusive process to limit a foreign investor's ability to choose the bit that it brings claims under, and arbitral tribunals might well do the same in the context of a bilateral arbitration treaty. In general, I think the potential for tension or conflict or duplication that exists with bilateral investment treaties would be reduced in the context of bilateral arbitration treaties combined with bilateral investment treaties. And that's, again, because of what we discussed previously, namely the subject matter of most bilateral arbitration treaties would be focused on international commercial disputes between businesses, while BITs would be directed more specifically towards foreign investment disputes, to investment disputes between a host state and a foreign investor.
Sure.
There's still possibilities, though, of overlap in particular circumstances, and one might want to think about how to prioritize the forum or to define which forum would be the preferred forum in those circumstances.
Sure. And if I am greedy a little bit, then maybe one more last question. Ultimately, the underlying principle behind both BITs and BETs possibly is the commercial transaction. I think there has to be an underlying commercial expectation or a commercial intention which leads to possible dispute into the transaction. Do you think BETs is can be a little bit wider than that, or are we looking at that to also limit itself to pure commercial transactions between the two investor states? Otherwise, we are obviously, facing another set of problems or another set of issues, which again goes to local courts, which may not be purely commercial.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And it sort of pushes for elaboration in a sense of the definition of the scope of a bilateral arbitration treaty. I've described it in general terms as focused on international commercial transactions, but one would have to think precisely what that meant. What precisely does an international commercial transaction or international commercial dispute mean? One would, and if you think a little bit about the New York Convention and Articles 1 and 2, those provisions at least obliquely address that, as does the UNCITRAL model law. There's an effort to define what is international, what is commercial. The New York Convention, importantly, leaves fairly broadly defined the types of disputes that can be submitted to arbitration. It provides in Article 2 that disputes, both contractual and non-contractual, can be submitted to arbitration. And thus it's well settled, for example, that corporate disputes, disputes that arise out of corporate bylaws in many countries, can be submitted to arbitration. And other types of non-contractual disputes, if they're covered by negotiated arbitration agreement, also are within the scope of the New York Convention. You could imagine that same approach being taken to bilateral arbitration treaties. You could imagine a bilateral arbitration treaty covering any commercial dispute, so that, for example, intellectual property disputes or disputes about misappropriation of trade secrets could be submitted to that arbitration, even if the parties didn't have an underlying commercial contract. On the other hand, the states that are parties to a bilateral arbitration treaty might want to take a more restrictive view, might want to limit that arbitrations to disputes arising out of commercial contracts where there was a contractual relationship between the parties. That would be a choice for the contracting states, and perhaps as a first step until the concept, the mechanism of bilateral arbitration treaties was implemented and proven, one might want to take a narrower definition, then subsequently expanding it if, as I believe to be the case, it proved to work.
Sure. So I think Shama has one last question.
I promised to be the last one.
It's definitely the last.
Okay.
You talked about the bilateral arbitration treaties to work out as a default mechanism. If you have a BIT that gives a narrow definition of investment and a bilateral arbitration treaty which gives a wider definition of commercial disputes, when a dispute arises between an investor and a state, what definition would you look at? Would the states try to go under the wider definition of commercial disputes under a bilateral arbitration treaty, or would the BIT definition of investment supersede in such cases?
No. In many cases, there probably would not be an overlap. Imagine a usual case under a bilateral investment treaty is be a narrow definition of investment in your hypothetical. The host state would likely argue that the dispute didn't arise from or arise directly from the investment that the foreign investor putatively made, and thus the BITS arbitration mechanism wasn't applicable. It could be in those circumstances, also depending on the terms of the bilateral arbitration treaty, that its mechanism also wouldn't be available. It would apply to commercial disputes between nationals from states A and B, and at least potentially it might not include states A and B themselves. It would only apply to a company from state A with a dispute against a company from state B. Some BATs might have broader provisions, and I think perhaps that's what your question envisages, where the states themselves, if party to a commercial dispute, could also be proceeded against under the bilateral arbitration treaty, or alternatively could raise their own claims under the bilateral arbitration treaty. The extent to which that is possible would depend on the terms of the individual bilateral arbitration treaty. I suspect states, again, as a first step, often might not extend the terms of the BAT to investor versus host state disputes. I think they might well prefer to keep the BIT mechanism for those types of disputes and have the BAT mechanism available for purely commercial, not investment disputes.
So thanks a lot, Gary. I think this is definitely thought-provoking for us. And more importantly, I think India will have to start thinking a lot with several of the bits coming up on free negotiations after the sunset clauses, exit convention not being ratified, and now BATs, where we need to really think through as to what we want to do as far as international commercial transactions are concerned. I think there is a lot that we have got through this less than 40 minutes of discussions. So thanks a lot for such a great point that you have raised and a very unique proposition. With that, we will end this webinar for this session, and we promise to come back with another interesting topic very soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Nishit Desai Associates, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.